Welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm Dr. Jay Butler, your host today. I think everyone's probably pretty well aware of the cardiovascular benefits of physical activity. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that children should get about 60 minutes of vigorous physical activity each day. But there's an emerging body of evidence showing that during childhood, that play may have a positive effect also on brain development. Today we have a panel of experts here to discuss the power of play. Joining us by phone from Boston is Dr. Michael Yagman, Assistant Professor of Pediatrics at the Harvard Medical School and Chief of Ambulatory Pediatrics at Mount Auburn Hospital, one of the Harvard teaching hospitals. Dr. Yagman is also immediate past chair of the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Psychosocial Aspects of Child Family Health. Dr. Yagman, welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection.
Thank you. Delighted to be with you.
And also joining me in the studio is Dr. Janet Shin. Dr. Shin is a graduate of Stanford University, where she also completed her pediatrics residency. And she's been caring for children at the Children's Clinic in Anchorage for over 20 years now. Dr. Shin, welcome.
Thank you for inviting me.
And finally, Wally Wilson, who has been on Line One in the past. Not sure if everybody realizes that Wally has master's degrees in physical therapy and exercise physiology, and he's director of positive leadership for active Alaska youth at the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. Wally, welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection.
Thank you, Jay. Thanks for having us on.
So as we start this discussion of the power of play, let's start with some definitions, as I like to do. So what is play? And I'm going to put that out as a toss-up question to the panel. Maybe Dr. Yagman, you would like to take this one first.
Sure, I'll start with some of the characteristics of play and some of the categories of play. So first of all, play is intrinsically motivated. It needs to be somewhat child-directed, active participation by the child, engaging, meaningful. Part of children's joyful discovery of the world around them, and often socially interactive. The categories of play include the social serve and return interactions early on in the first couple of months with parents, playing with objects, physical play, as we just alluded to, whether indoor rough-and-tumble play or outdoor exercise, the kind of pretend imaginary play linked with storytelling, and a thing we'll focus on a lot more in our conversation, this notion of guided play or playful learning, where adults may have a bit of a goal, but the child really directs the activity.
Okay. So does that mean play is unstructured? It is structured? When we think of play, it can be as simple as kids out in the yard, but it could also be organized sports. And we have a broad range of perspectives here. The Sports Hall of Fame certainly honors a lot of our athletes that are involved in organized sporting activities. So are there limits to how structured it can be or should be?
I think like a lot of things.
A variety of activities that are, are part of play. The spectrum can vary from some degree of free play to what we call playful learning, where we'll come back to this, where the adult might have a goal, but lets the child kind of move through that and direct a lot of the ways they implement those goals with a little bit of input on the side from adults, all the way to didactic, and I'm not sure I'd call that play, but certainly coaching involves a lot of playful learning, where the coaches have a goal and organized sports have a goal of improving the skill and the activity, but they're allowing the child or the participant to devise their own unique ways of mastering that sport.
Okay. Wally, you were going to add into that?
Well, I think sometimes the parents, if you're listening out there, that you feel like we're talking about a particular sport, and that can be something that the child migrates to down down the line. But I think if you back up earlier, I'll use elementary school as more the example. I think just kind of open-ended, three-dimensional play, maybe supervised, maybe not, depending on what the sport is, offers a tremendous amount of opportunity for the neuromuscular growth, but also the psychosocial growth, kind of negotiating consequences. But you could have a somewhat organized soccer, for example, coaching opportunity. And the coach might say at the end of practice, I'm going to let you kids just go play on your own on the pitch, but they kind of negotiate their own differences and figure out, and the coach is not necessarily heavy-handed. So I think it's a continuum, an opportunity, and a lot of settings to do both.
I've always been impressed that some of the most successful athletes are not only hard workers, but they love the game. No matter what the sport is, it is what they love to do. And it, you know, that there is not a hard and fast line between work and play, that probably the best goal for all of us in life is to have jobs that is like play, that's really fun and rewarding. And that probably is true in our leisure time as well. So when we think about play in the development of the individual, I think that begins to raise the question, is play universal in human societies?
Oh, I think it really is, not only in human societies, but, you know, animals play. And I think that there's been some data that evolutionarily play helps animals develop locomotor skills, that skills to survive and escape from predators. And I think if one goes back, I haven't seen a lot of data about this, but I think play is pretty universal in human societies. And it speaks to what you were just alluding to in sports, that kids just really enjoy that kind of activity, and the joy and the passion that comes with play, whether it be through sports or more free play, is just a fundamental part, I think, of the human condition.
Well, I know that many of us who spend time outdoors in Alaska have observed animals that certainly seem to be enjoying what they do. I'm picturing in my mind last summer watching sea lions slide down a mud bank at the mouth of the Kenai River, and there was no way that was anything more than fun, because they'd hit the water and they would get out of the water and run right back up and do it again. So is there archaeological evidence of when humans first played?
Not widely reported. There certainly is archaeological evidence about tool use, but whether it was used for play or grooming or I think has not been well studied, as far as I have noticed.
Okay. Well, as we think about the past and then look at the present, play certainly seems to be de-emphasized for kids in the 21st century, at least in public education. Dr. Yagman, you were quoted in a August 20th New York Times piece as saying only 30% of kindergarten programs offer, or 30% of kindergarten programs offer no recess at all. Is play no longer needed? Maybe Dr. Shen, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't agree with the statement that play is no longer needed. I think, our education system and emphasis has definitely shifted, probably to more, looking at academic standards and testing and everything. And I think recess has definitely, as well as, arts and PE and music, I think all of these other very important aspects of education have been de-emphasized. In the Anchorage School District, I think in elementary school, 45 minutes are allotted to recess and lunch daily. And as you know, in the wintertime, kids need to get their snowsuits on, and often they're eating lunch in their snowsuits. So they get maybe 20 minutes for lunch and 15, 20 minutes outdoors. when I ask kids in my practice what they like most about school, I would say 80% of them say recess, and that they wish there was more time for recess. And I think being in school for 7 hours a day, you definitely need the time for kids to just go outside, get some fresh air, but also to do something pretty unstructured. And I think if you look at other countries, I read that in Finland, something like 75 to 90 minutes per day for just recess, not including lunch. And if you look at test scores and success later on in life, they do much better than the U.S. And I don't know if you can, make that a cause and effect, but I think play and unstructured time and just being outside can definitely help, not just with physical well-being, but can help with attention span, can help with, cooperating with other kids, problem solving. So I think there's definitely a lack of opportunity for kids during the school day to engage in play.
Okay.
I couldn't agree more with what Dr. Shin just outlined. I think it's tragic that in national surveys, 30% of kindergartners no longer have recess. That makes no sense. Young children need that kind of activity to run their beans at. Every parent knows that. And I hear the same things that Dr. Shin described from kids in my practice when I ask them their favorite part of the day. It's typically recess. And yet, some of the kids that need it most, kids with attentional problems who may have some disruptive behavior in the classroom, it's really diabolical that one of the classroom strategies is to prevent those kids from having recess, which is the exact opposite of what they need. So the notion of 20 minutes for recess and 20 minutes for lunch really makes no sense.
I was commenting when Dr. Yagman, after our earthquake on November 30th, the following week, we didn't have school in Anchorage. And so as a physical therapist, I go into homes, and there were a couple of instances I were seeing people. And what really struck me, one lady in particular with a femoral fracture and some hardware and recovering from her leg injury, were the three children in the home. There was no school. There was no structure. And unfortunately, they were just parked in front of this battleship-sized TV with free run of the kitchen and the home. And the grandmother was telling me, "I'm fine. Can you do something with the kids?" And I said, but my attention was greatly divided between these children. And I was in the home twice that week for about an hour and a half per session.
Right.
And they never left that position in front of the couch and TV. And I think as soon as we can understand the connection that physical activity complements academic learning, complements behaviors which are consistent and kids interact. Once we and we connected, and people out there probably listening connected, but as we better make that connection, it's a complementary, not an exclusive thing. You're not sacrificing your academics in the enhancement of physical activity.
Yeah.
It's all about balance and realizing that we're kids are all of a piece, and we need to be able to address the whole child and the whole child's needs, their social needs, their academic needs, their relationship needs, and their physical activity needs.
All right. So as a reminder, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Our topic of discussion today is the power of play. And we welcome you to join the conversation by calling us toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. You can also contact us by email at lineone@alaskapublic.org. That's LINEONE at alaskapublic.org. Or if you're in the Anchorage area, the local number is 550-8433. We actually already have an email, and I'm going to give the emailer's name because I think she would like for me to do that. Kelly Lessons is co-founder of ASD60, And I know she has written pieces in the ADN, and she has a petition with over 6,000 signatures, people expressing concern to the school board about the lack of recess in the public schools here. And as we said at the opening, the CDC recommends 60 minutes per day of moderate to vigorous exercise. They don't say that has to be during the school day, but that's what is recommended. And so she raises the question of the dosage of recess, and I like that use of the term dosage. So she asks the panel, what, in your professional opinions, is the optimal recess dosage in a given day? How do the 20 minutes, as you were referencing, Dr. Shin, that most ASD schools provide to their students for recess compare with what might be the optimal quantity of time and manner of organization for unstructured play? And how much recess should be integrated into the existing 6.5-hour curricular day? Dr. Shin, I'm going to start with you, and then let's just go around and discuss that a bit.
Well, I'm a strong advocate for physical activity recess. I also know or think that a break, a recess or a couple recesses a day would help kids academically as well. And it could bring kind of engage kids in more social opportunities where they can make friends, play with each other, understand each other's, cultures. We have a very diverse student population here in Anchorage. And I think, I don't know if there's a correct number of minutes that I would say is the correct dosage for recess, but I definitely think 20-25 minutes is way too low a dose. 60 minutes sounds great. If it's ideally, if it could be broken down into two recesses a day, I think kids just need to get up and run around and grab a snack, even have some free time and engage the rest of their bodies in learning. And I think that it would benefit them not, academically as well. And I think there would be fewer behavioral problems, discipline problems, if kids were given the opportunity to do that. And I don't think that only applies to elementary school age kids. I would love to see middle school, high school kids getting out there having recess, just running around or taking a walk or just time for normal conversation. So I am definitely an advocate for, I'll sign that petition if you can get it to me.
All right, Kelly, you heard that live on the air here. So we'll let you follow up with Dr. Shin. So we're coming up on a break, but I want to return to this topic of recess time and play in schools. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host today, Dr. Jay Butler, and my guests are Dr. Michael Yagman of the Harvard University Medical School, Dr. Janet Shin of the Children's Clinic in Anchorage, and Wally Wallace. That's not right.
You're not the first time.
Wally. I'm just reading my notes
just
here,
call
Wally.
Me Bubba.
Yeah, okay. Wally Wilson, my old friend. I'll never forget, oh, what's his face, from the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame. And we're discussing the power of play. And we were just talking about the group ASD 60 and some of the concerns about the limited amount of access in the Anchorage public schools. Dr. Yagman, from your national perspective, I'm sure you have heard similar concerns raised from other parts of the country. I'm also wondering if you have seen parts of the United States or school districts that have got this right. Dr. Shen had mentioned her observations in Finland. Are we doing this right anywhere in the United States?
Well, I would say it's certainly been more widely implemented outside the United States. I think other countries have a much more child-centered focus. I think, you know, what's happened in the past 15 to 20 years is this focus on academic skills, the Common Core, No Child Left Behind, and I think teachers feel squeezed to use every minute to drill and kill kids for taking tests. And the things that have been sacrificed have been art and music and theater and exercise and recess. And there's some mandates about physical education, but I think, by and large, that's so structured that it doesn't serve the same purpose as the kind of freedom that recess allows children. And the other thing I think that's important to comment about is the issue about participation versus competition. So in the older grades, you know, kids get very competitive about varsity sports. But, you know, it may be that only a small number of kids get to participate in varsity sports. And for the children that may not make a team, they still need exercise. And apart from the after-school varsity practices, what opportunities do they have for exercise? Where are their safe playgrounds? In a lot of neighborhoods in the U.S., exercise outside of school may be compromised because playgrounds are in neighborhoods where they're not safe.
Mm. Yeah, there was a study.
Parents talk about the fact that they're concerned that they can't even leave their kids outside to play stickball the way they once were able to.
So safety is certainly a barrier to play. I've heard concerns from some educators and school administrators that risk management is a concern as well. Personal and public safety is an issue, and having access to appropriate equipment or places to be able to play is important. I think it also, as we talk about play in older kids, there's a question that we have to raise: is there a darker side to play? Where does bullying fit into this, or violence in contact sport? Wally, any thoughts on that from your perspective as a physical therapist?
Well, I again think the benefits are something to really go for, so to speak. I mean, in terms of a risk, you can mitigate risk. You probably can't eliminate risk. And there's a risk of, you know, Dr. Yagman, actually, my up here in terms of a safety playing out in the yard, many of us in Alaska are more concerned about moose and bear in the yard than necessarily strangers around the playground. But I think there's also a risk of that a child maybe just doing one thing, maybe one sport, of a risk of kind of working yourself into a orthopedic neuromuscular corner versus three-dimensional varied experiences. I actually encourage when parents are, maybe I'm seeing a child for an injury or something, and they, well, what does your child do sport-wise or activity-wise? And if it's all kind of the same thing, and it usually gets their attention, I said, I encourage you to give your child a little ADD, and they like, what is that? And I said, well, that's athletic deficit disorder.
Yeah.
And I said, I want your child to do varied things and open their universe up. You know, I keep saying three-dimensional because that's what it connects to me in terms of a kind of a neuromuscular part. But in terms of safety on the playground and things such as that, again, there's a lot of opportunity to mitigate, but not necessarily eliminate. But the risk-benefit, I am a strong proponent of, you know, activity and, yeah, and whatever it means.
It does strike me, yeah, as ironic as we talk about recess in schools. If we were talking about the healthy work site, we'd be talking about people not sitting for more than 60 to 90 minutes. We would be talking about whether or not there's health benefits of standing desks or even, yeah, treadmill desks. So, yeah, Wally, you have thoughts on that?
One thing I want to say in terms of what we were talking about with the activities per day in the school system. So Melanie Sutton here in the Acres School District, she's part of our committee of play that the program up next week that Dr. Yagman is coming up for. So there was a study, the American Journal of Preventive Medicine, 2016. They did a national survey, and there were about 4% of the schools, elementary, met the greater than or equal to 150 minutes per week school-based activity. So right, the CDC tells us 60 minutes a day, right? Which is great. In the schools, the goal was greater than or equal to 150. 4%, so that's low. I think in terms of how the school district might handle this is, you know, we put a lot of pressure on them, right? They're there a lot during the day, but there's also the responsibility outside of the school. And that's where we as adults and older kids come into the opportunity to lead these children to create an opportunity for maybe that other 30 minutes. So I think there's we're often, I think, in violent agreement or, you know, of what we're trying to do. In the school setting, quite often the elementary school teachers are broad-based and teach a lot of things, and then you have them teaching a physical activity class or physical education, and that's not their forte. So there's an inefficiency within the time allotted because we need to have a great opportunity for more, I think, physical education teachers, that's their specialty in the school setting as well. So it is multivariate. And I just think we need to be good listeners to parents and to teachers, because I know full well, with my work with the Anchorage School District and the directors and the teachers, the intention is there. Sometimes the creating the policy and the opportunity to put that in the curriculum is the challenge.
Okay. So, Wally,
I think we don't want to deprive kids totally of the opportunity to take risks, because risk-taking and adventure and discovery, you know, creates coping skills and resilience in kids. There's healthy risk-taking that helps them figure things out, learning to win and lose in competitive things, learning to be empathic. And so one of the benefits of play is being able to take safe risks. And I think we've sometimes gone overboard at acting like, you know, play needs to be completely 100% free of risk. Now, that's different than an urban neighborhood where there are, you know, shards of glass on the playground. That's a different level of unsafe conditions. But I couldn't agree more that what Wally said about the importance of cross-training and for kids to engage in multiple activities so that they experience a variety of physical experiences. And physical education classes have a role, but to the degree that they're overly structured, I think it's not the same as the opportunities for free expression that kids can experience in recess. And most kids don't describe the favorite part of their day as phys ed, but rather recess.
Yeah. So I'd like to take a caller, Kay from Juneau. Welcome to Line 1, your health connection. You had a question.
Well,
Or a comment.
I have a lot of thoughts because I taught early childhood education at the University of Alaska Southeast for over 25 years, and I was a preschool teacher and before that. And play is so important, and yet, as some of your speakers point out, play is essentially being eradicated from public education. And that's been going on for a long time. And unfortunately, I don't know if you have an answer to the question of why play is being eradicated from public education, especially in lieu of the facts that public education is failing our children in many significant ways. But there's such a huge amount of research that is completely ignored. And I know that the time lag between, you know, what comes out in the research and what people are learning and perhaps being given to really engage with in their education, in their teacher education. But to me, that's not really the reason, is that people just aren't reading the information or the research. It's because there is a very strong focus on testing and learning with the eye. You know, one of the main points that I used to teach was that young children in particular are learning with their large muscles. They're learning by being active. And the importance of play cannot be emphasized nearly enough, and yet it falls on deaf ears.
Well, Kay, I see a number of heads nodding here in the studio. I was wondering, Dr. Yagman or Dr. Shen, either one of you, I know we've touched on this a bit, but I'm wondering if you might want to add or more directly address Kay's question about why has this continued erosion of recess and the recognition of the benefits of play, despite the evidence and support, why has that continued to disappear from public education?
We really need to address the competition with media. You know, once upon a time it was only about television, and now the array of iPhones and iPads and media that children use as an electronic babysitter is very competitive with their ability to get outside and have exercise. And so I think that one doesn't want to just completely condemn it, because it can, to the degree that it's done collaboratively and socially. But when kids are just sitting at home playing games on an iPhone instead of getting some exercise or texting at night and not sleeping, there's some real impact. And I couldn't agree more with the caller that the impact on preschool curricula has been just devastating, to the degree that I had a preschool teacher in the Bronx tell me that her director ordered her to get rid of the blocks so that they could do more flashcards with their kids, and she was weeping about that. The opportunity for kids to do joyful discovery with simple objects like wooden blocks is just really valuable, and we shouldn't underestimate how much learning goes on when kids engage in those kinds of activities.
Dr. Shen, you also had thoughts on this.
Yes, I agree with the caller. I think, you know, I just to defend the professional educators and teachers, I think they want kids to get out and play more too, except their hands are tied. You know, they have a certain amount of information. They have curricula that they have to follow, and they have to squeeze that all in. They have to prove that their kids' test scores improve. So, you know, I definitely agree that kids need more gross motor activity, you know, more free time. But I think we all need to look at the big picture, and I think we in the healthcare profession should be advocating more for the Department of Education, school districts to include more recess time, more play time. But we can't give the full responsibility of, you know, children's play to teachers as well. I think as parents, as mentors, we need to give kids the opportunity to play outside of school too. You know, unfortunately, sports a lot of times are competitive, can be expensive if we want to sign kids up for soccer or swim lessons. You know, not everyone can do that, but there are simpler ways that parents and, you know, grandparents and neighborhoods can encourage kids to play. You know, just as a pediatrician, we try from a very young age, you know, from the very first visit, we give parents examples. We teach them how to interact with children, you know, and I even talk to parents of high school kids who, you know, when we're trying to get them to encourage physical activity or get them off their tablets or whatever, what do you guys do for fun? What do you do as a family? You know, what, and I know when it's 20 below outside and it's dark, you can't really tell your kids to go outside and play, but, you know, crank up the music and have a dance party, you know, or engage kids in your household activities. You can make cleaning the house fun too, you know, if you do it right, works for about 20 minutes, but, you know, that's engaging as well. So I think we spend a lot of time saying, yes, schools should offer more recess time. Kids should have the opportunity to do sports. You know, again, sports can get competitive. Kids don't want to do sports that they're not good in. And I think that's pretty sad, because I think innately kids want to play.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for joining us. For everyone, you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. Our topic of discussion today is the power of play, and we welcome you to join us by calling toll-free statewide at 1-888-353-5752. You can also drop us an email at line1@alaskapublic.org. So, Dr. Yagman, you made reference to screen time, as did Dr. Shin, and we oftentimes think of screen time in negative terms, primarily because it is time that is sedentary, and it probably is not, I mean, almost certainly is not giving us the cardiovascular benefits we're looking for. But as we think about neurological development, can digital play or internet games actually have a positive effect? Dr. Yagman, let me go to you with that.
Surely. Well, I think that, again, as with all things, there's a balance. And screen time is not going to go away, but there are characteristics of screen time that are positive and beneficial, and others that aren't so much so. So that when children are sharing screens with parents, with young children, with parents, with peers, and they're doing collaborative problem solving, they can be very beneficial. When there are some video games that really engage children in exercise, and that can be very beneficial. So there's a difference between screens used in those positive ways and screens that have children just isolating themselves in a corner, you know, by themselves, just pushing buttons on a screen, or for older kids, you know, texting at night in their bedroom and not sleeping. And kids watch what their parents are doing. So if parents during the family dinner time are texting and not engaging in the kind of conversation with their children at mealtimes, that's again, not a positive message we want to encourage about the use of screens. So screens are their potential benefits, their potential risks, like anything else. And I think parents and kids need to find the right balance.
Dr. Shin, do you screen for screen time in your practice?
Yes, we do. At all the preventive visits, we ask, well, the question used to be, how much TV time do you get? But kids don't watch TV anymore. It's how much screen time, and it's pretty impressive what kids come up with when they add up the hours. Unfortunately, you know, a lot of schoolwork is done on the computer, but you know, I couldn't agree more that parents really have to take control of their own screen time use, as well as of their kids, you know, starting at a young age, because it's hard to take away a 16-year-old's phone. It's easier to do it to a one-year-old. But
the reaction may be similar.
The reaction is similar. But you know, parents need to model good behavior as well. So we do ask parents and kids how much screen time they use. We quote the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations for safe media use, and their recommendation that really under the age of 18 or 24 months that kids don't get screen time. And then, you know, 1 hour maximum of, you know, total in 24 hours for up to age, I think, five or so. And, you know, that sounds kind of ridiculous, but we definitely see screens as what Dr. Yogman said, you know, as a free babysitter. And screens can comfort kids, you know, when they're angry, when they're sad, when they're acting crazy, you know, the screen comes out. So, you know, I have pretty strong feelings about kids and adults and screen time use, but, you know, it's not going away.
All right. Well, we need to take a short break. You're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media, and we'll be back in a minute to continue the discussion of Power of Play.
Funding for Line One, Your Health Connection was made possible in part by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and listeners just like you. Thank you.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host today, Dr. Jay Butler, and my guests are Dr. Michael Yogman of the Harvard Medical School, Dr. Janet Shen of the Children's Clinic in Anchorage, and Wally Wilson of the Alaska Sports Hall of Fame, and we're discussing the power of play in health and development. We have been talking about screen time a bit, but we've also been talking about structured recess, and we have a call from Pete in Anchorage who would like to talk about structured recess. Pete, welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection.
Hi, Jay. This is Dr. Pete Muse. I've been involved with this issue for many decades. I had a meeting several decades ago with Dr. David Thatcher, who was then the Surgeon General and was actively promoting 60 minutes a day, and that certainly hasn't changed. As your panel knows very, very well, we're in the midst of a pandemic of childhood obesity with decreased school performance, diabetes, cancer, depression, decreased self-esteem, and on and on and on. Physical activity is inherently important in changing that particular pandemic lifestyle. But the CDC has also recommended, as all your panelists know over the years, that the schools are the ideal vehicle to achieve 60 minutes per day. Among other things, they recommended structured recess. I happen to sit on the Mayor's Task Force on Obesity, which Mayor Begich convened, and we published an extensive report back in 2006, and among the physical activity recommendations was structured recess. I established a trial program, a pilot, at William Tyson School. And the principal, it was not mandatory, it was voluntary, but both principals were elated with what happened. And that was that attendance improved among those who participated, attention improved, behaviors improved, eating behaviors, and on and on and on. It was a total success. The science, as all your panelists know, is unequivocal. Exercise and play stimulates learning, and it seems only fair to kids who are otherwise brimming with energy to offer them the opportunity throughout the school day, which, of course, is going to contribute to their health and overall learning. So one of your panelists has mentioned, and I would reiterate, that play and exercise results in the joy in simply being active and fit. Joy, I think, is the key word. Some schools offer before and after school physical activity, that comes and goes. The CDC has said that the how of being physically active is more important than the why. And as one of your panelists mentioned, the majority of kids are not competitive athletes. So how to encourage them to be physically active and offer options for them to be physically active, whether it's skateboarding, jumping rope, breakdancing, it doesn't matter, but how to be physically active. So again, joy in being physically active is key. And by the way, I am a member, an active member of ASD 60, which is hopefully making good inroads. And we'll see where it goes. So I thank you very much for this very, very important topic, Jay.
Well, Dr. Muse, thank you for joining us today. There's a lot of nods in the studio here. And just thank you for the really years of work that you've done. You were a cross country when cross country wasn't cool. And you've really, I think, changed the lives of many young people who became adults, whose lives have been improved by your work promoting physical activity in Anchorage. So thank you for joining us and providing that comment today. Before we take another call, we've talked quite a bit about the cardiovascular benefits, but Dr. Yagman, you've written that children playing with toys act like scientists. You know, I suspect you're getting into some of the concepts of brain development and learning, but tell us a little more about what you mean by that.
Yeah, I think by looking, listening, by actively engaging and exploring aspects of objects in the world around them, they are like scientists discovering things. And in fact, there's some marvelous studies by cognitive psychologist Allison Gopnik at Berkeley and a group at MIT that if you give kids a toy and describe all the different features of the toy, they're much less interested than if you just give them a toy and say very little and let them discover. So there's their science at work. It's really quite exciting, and to watch the kind of, as the caller mentioned, the kind of joy in their face as they're figuring things out and problem solving. It's particularly important that when kids do it together and they develop the social skills of collaborating and problem solving and play and recess can do that. If you watch kids, you know, engage with each other during recess. So those two important principles, the scientific discovery, the joy of that, and the opportunity for kids to collaborate and problem solve together and manage those relationships. There's one other point that we haven't gotten to, I want to make sure we get in, which is this notion that, you know, families are stressed, they're often working two jobs, and, you know, is this just another burden we're asking them to subsume to, you know, carve out time to play with their kids? Well, or to buy expensive toys. And I think far from that, it's quite simple when parents are making dinner to put some plastic leftover dishes or wooden spoons or measuring cups on the floor with their child. Because kids are amazing at how they can discover the properties of stacking measuring cups or spoons or inexpensive household objects, creating forts with old cartons. Those kinds of opportunities don't cost money and don't have to consume a lot of parents' time.
Well, and that can get kids into the kitchen, too, which is something we want. So I'd like to take another caller. Kanani, welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection.
Hi. I just kind of wanted to address take it back to the learning process and how crucial play is for learning. And while I completely agree that we, as parents, need to be proactive in getting our children out and play, it concerns me that our school system doesn't, like, that the way of teaching on a large scale isn't acknowledging how important that play is for learning, not just for, like, health, but benefits and whatnot, but it concerns me as a parent that I'm about to send my kid to a school where, like, overall play is not acknowledged as to how a child learns. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Wally, do you have thoughts on that?
Well, I think just combining some of our talk from an academic standpoint or psychological task learning, do you think about a fixed mindset of a child versus a growth mindset? When Dr. Yagman was talking about give a child a block with instructions, a very fixed approach, the child might not be as creative versus you gave the child a block and said, hey, have fun with the block. I think the same parallel exists in physical activity. And we want to create children with a growth mindset of physical activity. So when we say play, we're not necessarily, you have to sign up for a league or pick a sport. But again, it is varied and it encourages so many things that, again, that translate over to the academic, to the behavioral, to the lifelong skill process. So research is great. Research in whatever field we're in gives us a brick in the wall to move forward. But common sense is very powerful. Common sense is very timely. And the concepts, as she just talked about, and Dr. Yagman and Dr. Shin, it's very affordable. It's reachable. A lot of these things aren't cost prohibitive. And policy and cost can be a big barrier to moving forward, but it doesn't have to be.
Great. Kanani, thank you for joining us on Line 1, Your Health Connection. Now, a topic that you've touched on, Wally, and I'm going to direct this question towards Dr. Yagman. We often have, over the past couple of years, talked about adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, on Line 1, and toxic stress during childhood has the negative impacts of toxic stress on child growth and development as a driver of poor health later in life. Does play have a mitigating effect on this stress response, and does play improve coping skills and build resilience? Dr. Yagman?
Yes, it certainly does, and that's a major part of our discussion in our paper. One of the things we're writing about now is that, in addition to kind of, you know, doing what we can in terms of policies to eliminate adverse experiences, there are two other ways to promote resilience. One is to solidify social relationships, which are protective in buffering stress. And the second one is to develop executive function skills, the kind of collaboration, problem solving, task persistence. And play is critical in both of those domains. So particularly when play involves relationships with parents who get to understand their young children's nonverbal behavior, and re-experience some of the joy of their own childhood, it really makes the child feel they're being listened to. It really supports their relationship, and that, more than anything, buffers adversity and stress. And when kids learn the kind of skills, the kind of 21st century skills through play, not memorization, but, as I say, problem solving, task persistence, working memory, those kinds of executive function skills in the prefrontal cortex are really what enables kids to master adversity. So play is a critical component in managing toxic stress.
Okay, and we have one more caller I'd like to try to get in. Suki, welcome to Line 1, Your Health Connection.
Hey, how are you?
Fine.
Yeah.
Hi, Suki.
Hi, how are you?
It's a familiar voice.
Yeah. So I had a question about the time of day that kids play outside. I know a lot of times, like, when winter rolls around, I get home and it's like, well, it's dark and cold out at this point, and we have the whole vitamin D deficiency. Is there like a, does it matter what time your kids go out and play during the day? And is it kind of like any time outside is better than no time? Can you talk a little bit about how, like, specific to playing outside in the winter time is important, and getting them outside during the day, or if it's fine if it's in the evening?
Dr. Shin, would you like to comment on that one?
Just take them outside anytime.
Anytime?
Yes.
That's what headlamps are for.
Yes, and multiple times a day if you can do it.
It does raise the question of whether or not exposure to the brief period of sunshine that we have in midwinter, while that's not enough to provide any vitamin D exposure through the skin, and the skin's covered anyway, does that actually help people who are more prone to seasonal affective disorder?
I think definitely any exposure to natural light is important. You know, ultimately, that would be a good time to get outside. But I think with our busy schedules, you know, if it's after work or, you know, coming home from the store at night, just I think any time outside to get some fresh air and engaging your kids, you know, that's wonderful.
Okay. Suki, thank you for joining us on Line One, Your Health Connection. So, Wally, speaking of play, the Sports Hall of Fame has its annual Positive Leadership for Active Alaska Youth, or PLAY. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
That summit is coming up next week. Dr. Yogman will be here in Anchorage and be one of the featured speakers. What else do you have to tell us about the conference and the related events related to the PLAY Summit?
Yeah, well, thank you. So the PLAY Summit, and we put an extra A in there. And so kind of the premise, today we're talking about be it in the home setting, be it in the school setting. We all agree that kids need to be active. Well, the Positive Leadership for Active Alaska Youth, we want to take it a little bit further, but say we as adults, older children, need to be those great role models for kids to be active, because we got to basically practice what we preach. So Dr. Yogman, we are excited that he is coming up here next Wednesday, all the way from Boston. And he, on Thursday, February 21st at 10 a.m., at the Special Olympics Center, we're going to have our third annual Play Day. And Play Day, a lot of teachers have heard. Last year, we were at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. We had 18,000 to 20,000 kids simultaneously exercising 30 minutes
statewide.
And so you can go to the plaay.org site. So that'll be our kickoff next Thursday at 10 a.m. Next Thursday evening at APU at 7 p.m. to 8:30. Dr. Yogman will be joined by four local professionals, and our moderator will be Dr. Lily Liu, about similar topics, and there'll be an open forum in addition to professional perspectives. And then Friday at Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium at noon, Dr. Yogman will be with us again. He'll give our keynote address for the PLAY Summit, which our mantra there is reach and teach. This summit is about connecting with adults who, in a varied sense of capacities with children, be it mentor, coach, music teacher, to really address the wide-based issues, much of which we talked about today, but the importance of working with kids as a role model and for proper leadership.
Great. Thank you, Wally. Thank you, Dr. Shin. Thank you, Dr. Yogman, and we look forward to seeing you at the PLAY Summit in Anchorage next week. And thanks to all of you for joining us today on Line One, Your Health Connection. Next week, I'll be back and speaking with Heidi Osby of Just Kids Pediatric Dental Center in Anchorage, and we'll be commemorating National Children's Dental Health Month with a discussion of dental health for children. Zakiya McCummins is Line One's producer. Chris Badalek was our sound engineer, and Ammon Swenson edited our web content. This is Dr. Jay Butler wishing you a healthful life informed. This is Alaska Public Media.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.